Canada Land, funded by you.
I'm Jesse Brown, and today we're talking shit about the news for the 500th time. Damn, that is a lot of opinions. Today we'll be touching on some bad takes about that bad night in Amsterdam. We'll tell you about a lawsuit against Canada for its inaction in the Middle East. And we'll talk about Canada's TikTok ban. Turns out Justin Trudeau just really hates this voice.
This one weird trick will quash a caucus revolt.
Wait for that. Host of our weekly Tuesday Politics Edition, Noor Ezria.
Hi, Jesse.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Noor, Politico, the news site Politico, warned us to watch for Canadian news drops during the American election, that the government or others who need to get something out there in the public but don't want anyone to pay attention to it, the way that you do that is you bury it within the flood of U.S. election coverage.
Okay.
You know, when we're distracted. And guess what?
What?
During Kamala Harris's concession speech on Wednesday, right when journalists were nearing their deadlines on coverage of the American election, the Canadian government announced pretty big news, a TikTok ban in Canada.
The federal government says TikTok needs to go.
Well, after a national security review, Ottawa is ordering TikTok to end its Canadian chapter.
TikTok has a billion users worldwide and more than 100 offices globally, but its Canadian operations are shutting down.
Activities by TikTok jeopardize Canadian security.
We've been preoccupied by the activities of the corporate entity of TikTok Canada.
So if the idea was to fly under the radar, it failed. This was picked up by the wire services, The Guardian, The New York Times. Of course, our media in Canada also had it. The TikTok ban is a big deal.
Huge deal.
You are aware, as we all are by now, that TikTok is banned in Canada.
I am very much aware. It is really important news for the Gen Zer in this office.
How is it affecting you, the banning of TikTok?
I mean, I opened it this morning, so I don't think very much.
Yeah, the app is still available. I think that TikTok ban, you would think that you would, you know, then be facing a ban of the app.
No, yeah.
It's the app is still available.
So people can't make TikToks anymore, you mean?
No, Canadians can totally still make TikTok videos. Of course, our ability to get paid anything for making them is compromised by this. But no, the ban does not stop Canadians from uploading videos to TikTok.
So then what did they ban?
They did not ban TikTok's ability to survey Canadians and collect information on us. Whatever TikTok is doing, whatever information they're collecting, they're still collecting. That is not banned. Whatever TikTok is able to do in terms of interfering in our culture and politics, you know, like pumping up divisive messages, misinformation.
Mm-hmm.
That's not banned. That's still totally doable.
So what are they banning?
Noor, they have closed two offices that TikTok maintains. Like TikTok, the Canadian company, they have like Canadian subsidiaries.
Mm-hmm.
They have shut down, the government has decided to shut down TikTok's offices in Toronto and Vancouver.
What does that even do?
Well, according to internet law professor Michael Geist, banning the company rather than the app may actually make matters worse, since the risks associated with the app will remain, but the ability to hold the company accountable will be weakened. So if Canada wants to go sue TikTok, there's nowhere for them to send the lawsuit to. Like, there's nobody to go serve. If they want to like use some leverage, like we're going to, you know, we want to meet with you, we want to talk with you, and if you don't do what we say, there's going to be consequences. There's like, I guess you have to fly to China. It's a really confusing move.
And it sounds like they shot themselves in the foot, really.
I think that trying to figure out the intent behind this is something that nobody has a very clear idea. Nobody's even confident that they know. Geist went on to say, it is puzzling to take an approach that seems to weaken enforcement, weaken some of the other public policy objectives that this government has. This government, of course, has this like online harms bill, and like they want to interfere with internet content in so many ways. I don't know how they're going to do that with TikTok banned. Geist further says, doesn't seem to really do anything to the underlying security and privacy-related concerns. Brett Carraway, associate professor at the Institute of Communication, Culture, Information, and Technology at U of T, calls this weird.
Yeah, man.
With respect to the weird signal that the Canadian government is giving, which is to say there's something bad going on, but not bad enough to ban the platform, just the company, this strikes me as very strange. I'm asking myself, he said, how does this make a Canadian safer? If they can still engage with the platform, if you're not disrupting that, then what does it mean to dissolve TikTok Canada? Let's hear what the government has to say. This is François-Philippe Champagne, Minister of Innovation, Science and Industry.
What is important for Canadians to know, we're talking about the operations, not the application. Obviously, parents and anyone who wants to use social platform should be mindful of the risk. The decision we took was to protect the national security of Canada on the basis of the analysis that we conducted with our security services. And we came to the conclusion that these activities that were conducted in Canada by TikTok at their offices would be injurious to national security.
It's about as clear as mud.
Means nothing to me, really.
Melanie Joly said that the point was to send a message to China.
Oh.
Here's what Philip Mai, who is the co-director of Toronto Metropolitan University's Social Media Lab, says. It looks like they might be slow-walking the TikTok ban. To bring Canada in line with our Five Eyes partners, they may have to ban the app completely, but that would be way after the election. Okay, so I think I understand what he's saying here. Of course, people will remember that this, like, let's ban TikTok thing, you know, America said that they're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Unless ByteDance, the parent company, divests from China, and they gave them, like, a timeline on that. But now with Trump being elected, that's all in doubt.
Mm-hmm.
But the consensus amongst the Five Eyes partners, the countries in the security alliance, and I guess, like, the West, is that TikTok is a threat. I know that, like, there's, like, different parts to this, and the surveillance thing was always less convincing to me than the influencing our culture and society. That, like, strikes me as, like, quite scary.
Mm-hmm.
Especially just, like, I don't know. I find it, like, it's a pretty sticky app.
Oh, totally. When I saw this news, it reminded me of a story that I read a little while back. In the summer of 2024, this year, journalists in Toronto were invited by TikTok's PR team to the Toronto offices, the TikTok Toronto offices. And the official purpose of that day was for some kind of presentation about safety on the app. Their global head of regional product policy had a 30-minute presentation. And in that 30-minute presentation, she used the word safe 30 times, according to reporting from the Globe and Mail. And they were inviting journalists to essentially come in and be like, hey, is it safe in here? Is it everything cool and chill in these offices?
That's their policy person. That's not part of their business operations. Because TikTok knows they've got this policy fight and this regulatory fight with the Canadian government. If I had to analyze the thinking here from Ottawa, it's that Trudeau and the timing of this release.
Oh, totally. The election coming up.
I would agree with Philip Mai here that this is probably there was some pressure to do something. And mm-hmm. like everything this government does is, okay, well, let's do something like a half measure and let's try to make sure nobody notices and let's get through the week and placate this immediate thing that's on fire and hope that this doesn't blow up in our face in a month.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be very surprised if they have any intention of leading the charge against TikTok. They're going to wait to see what Trump does. Mm-hmm. Maybe this buys them some time. I don't know what's happening behind the scenes.
But it seems like Trump is going to walk back the initial statement he made in his first term as president. He recently said that we need to save TikTok in America.
For all of those that want to save TikTok in America, vote for Trump. The other side's closing it up. But I'm now a big star on TikTok. We even have TikTok Jack, and we're setting records. We're not doing anything with TikTok, but the other side's going to close it up. So if you like TikTok, go out and vote for Trump.
I find it amazing how he can, like, take two sides on so many subjects.
It's bizarre.
Anyhow, don't get me started. But when Trudeau first became prime minister, he was the tech prime minister.
He was a tech bro.
That was his, like, style. And he had a friendship and a relationship with Ben Chin, like, the guy who was running Facebook Canada, who now works at the PMO. And when the Minister of Democracy, Karina Gould, held, like, this open forum on how the Trudeau government is going to, like, improve our democracy, mm-hmm. Facebook hosted it. And he was, like, cozying up with Mark Zuckerberg. This is before everybody hated Facebook, right? And it was still something that people said, that, like, all of these platforms are going to, like, make government more open, and they're going to, like, make mm-hmm. the citizenry more engaged. And
something like that.
He was all about that stuff. And it is incredible to, like, just look, like, a decade later, not even, and it's like, you can't post news on Facebook in Canada. There's this weird shakedown of Google. There's a ban on TikTok. It's just like this grab bag of... He's made such a mess out of it. Like, mm-hmm. it's not like he went the one way and said, no, this is great for innovation and the economy, nor did he go the other way and say, like, let's actually, like, that was really the opportunity for Canada, I think, was to, like, seriously regulate big tech, be a world leader in that sense. And instead, it's like, it's just a mess.
Shit show.
That's what I was going to say.
I'm sure you've all heard the news about the TikTok ban here in Canada, and like me, are probably freaking out about it a little bit.
Le gouvernement canadien ordonne à TikTok Canada de fermer ses portes pour des raisons de sécurité nationale.
Hundreds of people will lose their jobs in the near future. TikTok will still make money, but don't pay any Canadian tax, and you can still drive traffic to OnlyFans.
And this also means no more support for small businesses, no more support for creators like me, no more support for new up-and-coming Canadian brands.
But don't worry, your doom scrolling isn't going anywhere. Canadian users can still access the app.
En pleine transparence, j'ai des contacts avec TikTok Canada. Ça arrive qu'ils m'invitent à des événements et ils me donnent des fois des petits cadeaux promotionnels.
Should I be doomsday piling my videos and saving everything off the platform? I don't know. There's not a lot of news, there's a lot of speculation. So, what have you heard? Canadian mamas, what are we doing?
What about the TikTokers? Won't somebody think of the TikTokers? What I know about these offices, like oh, these offices that they shut down,
mm-hmm.
the main purpose is when they set up shop in a mm-hmm. country, which is we're using TikTok like crazy, but they want it to actually become an industry.
Totally.
So they open up these offices to go and meet with advertisers and, like, sell advertising products. And then they go and they do, like, outreach to content creators. And mm-hmm. they say, like, hey, this can be your job. Let's like, connect you to brands and let's get you to meet each other. They're trying to, like, bring not just social media as, like, a app, but as a industry to Canada. So to shut that down strikes me as, like, a media story.
Totally. I saw Wallace Wong. He's a TikTok creator. He has 1.8 million followers. He's a Toronto-based chef. And he was complaining about the fact that they've lost this vital line of communication. It's a lose-lose, really, for a lot of people. But something that I saw that made me really chuckle, the innovation minister, Champagne, said that the people that are directly affected by the decision are the TikTok employees in those offices, which he claims, most of whom aren't Canadian citizens. In a later statement, a spokesperson from TikTok said that this is categorically untrue and a troubling insinuation. The majority of TikTok staff in Canada are Canadian citizens and permanent residents, and that they invite the minister to meet the employees whose jobs and livelihoods will be impacted by this order. Hilarious.
Oh, my God.
Horrible.
So they wanted to get ahead of a, I guess, accurate criticism that you, like, thanks, Trudeau government, you just cost, like, some tech jobs in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And their response was, don't worry, they're all Chinese.
Like, what the fuck?
They were wrong. I think you know the app better than I do. And there is, like, a ecosystem of Canadian content creators who like, this is going to suck for.
The Vancouver Sun actually talked to some of these Canadian influencers, one of them being Emmy Rain Curtis, who literally credits TikTok Canada with launching her influencing career. There's also Vancouver-based creator Nadia Snook. She literally signed her first major deal with Powerade and says that she couldn't have done it without TikTok Canada's help.
I can kind of almost, like, sense people rolling their eyes like, oh, who cares about some TikTok influencers? But this is a major way in which people are getting their media. It's a mode of expression, and it's not something that Canadians should be, like, at a disadvantage in terms of the economy of doing it or the tech or the supports. Like, you kind of want Canadians to be able to do this as well as anybody. And to have your own government kind of stacking the deck against you, I mean, it's actually nothing new. It's stuff that I've been covering in tech for a long time. Like, there's a lot of hurdles that get put up.
Totally.
As like an end user who's been on the platform for a long time, like, what are your takeaways from this move?
I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about how to balance protecting people from the powers of big tech, but also preserving social media as a platform for free speech. I don't know. It's a hard thing to balance.
It's trying to figure it out with low information. Like, we traditionally, there is a really legitimate case to be made, and it's something that we've had for a long time. Like, a foreign owner cannot own a newspaper chain, okay, which Post Media found a little loophole for. Our telecommunication system, like, the reason why we have Canadian stations that mostly just play American shows, believe me, NBC would love to just have their own affiliate stations here. They're not allowed to.
Mm-hmm.
The magazine industry even had protectionist stuff. And this was all about not allow, especially like a country like ours, which is small and next to this major superpower, that we have to have some sort of informational autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just like have everybody sucking in information and we have no control over it at all, because other nations could come in and for commercial reasons or political reasons, they could fuck with our democracy. That's legit.
Yeah.
You know, those concerns are legit. And we're not the only country that has this concern about TikTok, but like, figure the shit out.
Please figure it out and don't get rid of it.
Noor, let's duly note some stories. What do you have?
I have a story for you. A coalition of Canadian legal rights groups launched a lawsuit against the federal government, and they're charging the federal government with failing to prevent genocide in Gaza and violating its obligations under the 1948 Genocide Convention. The case centers around two Canadians who both have experienced themselves and their family members just horrific, horrific things. One of the plaintiffs was trapped in Gaza during the initial bombardment in October, lost family members in Israeli attacks, and they lost their entire house in Gaza City. It was destroyed after an airstrike. It killed their father, their sisters, uncle, aunts, nephews, and a bunch of other family members. And essentially, they're seeking justice and a declaration that Canada violated its duty to take all measures within its power to prevent what they are calling a genocide. And they argue that the government's failure to act has violated their charter rights to security of the person and equal protection under the law without discrimination. That's a bit of what's in the case. But what is interesting to me is that I've seen nothing about this lawsuit in any Canadian media. I saw it on Twitter and then I tried to Google it. Two articles came up, one from the Middle East Eye and the other from the Middle East Monitor, but no Canadian media coverage. And that just striked me as odd.
Duly noted. I want to duly note a post made by Toronto Star journalist and columnist Bruce Arthur, that he's since deleted. It begins like this. Anti-Semitism is a cancer, but just pause there. This, if you ever find yourself typing the words, anti-Semitism is a cancer, but move away from your keyboard, take a walk, talk to a friend, do not hit post. He finished the post and he hit post. Anti-Semitism is a cancer, but it feels like calling what happened in Amsterdam anti-Semitism is either expanding the definition into very uncomfortable places or deliberate ignorance of who was involved and what they did. All right. Like I said, he removed the post. He didn't say much about why. He said it wasn't correct. Didn't really say what was incorrect about it. But I think that what he's expressing there is not something that he alone felt. Many people, first they saw the news that roving gangs were beating up Jews on the streets of Amsterdam. People saw that clip of the driver yelling that he's on a Jew hunt. And they also found themselves asking the question, is this really anti-Semitism? Because quickly after we heard about anti-Semitic mobs beating up people on the streets of Amsterdam, we saw other clips that were really awful. Videos of these Israeli soccer hooligans chanting like racist, worse than racist, like genocidal songs, ripping down Palestine flags, even saw a clip of some of them vandalizing a car. And a lot of people said, see, they incited this. I guess the idea being, like, if you're going to get a crowd together and chant racist songs and vandalize things, what do you expect? What do you think is going to happen? Not that, I guess I'm going to say. I've been hearing racist songs and chants and seeing a lot of vandalism a lot over the past year. And not once did I get in my car and start hunting down people and beating them with a bunch of my friends. But secondly, there is zero reason to conclude that the same people who were chanting those racist songs and acting like assholes in Amsterdam, that those were the exact same people who caught beatings, like vicious beatings by those roving mobs. And if you read the reporting in the Wall Street Journal or the UK Independent, there are accounts of other people entirely being stopped by mobs in the street, demanded, like, let me see your passport. One person said that they were asked if they were Jewish, and then they were punched in the face. There is evidence that some of these attacks were planned before those Israeli soccer bros did their racist songs. But yeah, those soccer fans who stirred things up were disgusting. And yes, what happened next was anti-Semitic and racist and vicious. They were like, come on, everybody. Like, they were yelling cancer Jew as they were going on Jew hunts. And we have people like, I don't know, is that anti-Semitic? Like, if you see that and your impulse is to be like, I don't know, I'm a skeptic when I hear people say anti-Semitism, you know, maybe there's another side to this. Like, there's always another side to this. There is more to it. It didn't just come out of nowhere. But, like, it doesn't excuse what we all saw happening. So Bruce was not alone with this. I saw widespread rejection that there's anything wrong going on at all. And I had to wonder, like, I'm watching people who, like, I have very little confidence that these people would recognize anything as anti-Semitism if they don't recognize this.
I think something that stuck out to me in all of this is that the idea that, like, football and soccer, whatever you want to call it, has always been in some way political. And for us to kind of pretend that sports are not feels like a bit of a mythology. I feel like there's a bit of a double standard here that I kind of want to point out. If Moscow fans were rampaging through the streets of Amsterdam, chanting death to Ukrainians, tearing down flags, I think we both know what the response would be. But this situation of Russia tearing down Ukrainian flags and making genocidal chants is actually not possible, because 4 days after the Russian invasion of Ukraine, the Union of European Football Associations immediately banned all Russian teams from the European football competition. And after a year of what's been going on in Gaza, which the ICJ, the International Court of Justice, is now investigating, 10 years after the Palestinian Football Association raised that Israel is in constant violation of FIFA statutes on racism and other things like having settlement teams in their domestic leagues, which is, by the way, illegal in FIFA rules, we've heard nothing. And this, to me, is a bit of a double standard. And I think both things can exist in the same world.
I'm going to push back on that, like, respectfully.
Okay, let's hear it.
The argument that, well, Israel should be banned from soccer does exist in the same universe. And it's like, we can have that debate somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But what just happened has nothing to do with that, right? What just happened was that, yes, there was an inciting incident that has to do with sports. I suppose if that team was banned, maybe it wouldn't have happened that night to those people in that specific way. But you're talking about something that happened that should shake everybody to their core. To see mobs on the street hunting down people on the basis of their ethnicity, not because they have the wrong football flag, not because they necessarily, they were like, are you Israeli? Are you Jewish? And then beating the crap out of them. If we can't maintain a standard that is absolutely abhorrent, whoever you are, and if a discussion about what just happened, and yes, a fear that it's spreading around the world, can't just stand alone without some sort of mitigation or claim of double standard that it has to do with the lack of a sporting ban, then I have, I think, legitimate fears about my ability to simply protect myself. What is very frustrating right now is a sense that it's not simply that I think another window was broken or even another person was beaten. It's that the term itself, which is that we need the term. We need to be able to call something anti-Semitic so that we can say, hey, I thought we agreed that there shouldn't be anti-Semitism. It just happened. Can this please stop?
Mm-hmm.
Is now I'm reading people saying that term has lost all of its meaning. And there are people who have used it improperly and weaponized it in defense of political cause and in defense of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're at a point where I'm reading like people under their own names saying, well, this is a badge of pride at this point. I'm glad that they're calling me an anti-Semite. So what does that mean for an actual victim of anti-Semitism? What does this proposed soccer ban mean to the person who was just walking down the street in Amsterdam and was just like not even necessarily at the game and was stopped and asked, are you a Jew? And before they could answer, they were punched in their face. There is a reflexive unwillingness. Like, well, yes, that's terrible, but isn't it Israel that's conflating I'm not talking to you about it. I'm talking about the guy who got punched in his face, you know? Well, that's awful, but if they had only – I'm not talking to you about a soccer ban. I'm talking about like that it's become unsafe to be a certain kind of human being in many places. So, yes, these two issues do coexist in the same universe, mm-hmm. but they don't have to coexist in the same conversation. Like we all should agree that we have a common interest in, like, dealing with what is happening as if it matters and is serious.
I think we can agree that two things can exist at once. Duly noted.
Nor, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, that's our show for today. Thank you for joining us. You can email me about it. I am at jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything you send. Nor, where can people find you?
You can find me on Tuesdays on Canada Land for our politics edition. You can also email me at nor@canadaland.com.
This episode is produced by James Nicholson with additional production by Caleb Thompson. Our production manager is Max Collins, who also did the fact-checking for this episode. I'm Jesse Brown, editor and publisher of Canada Land. This episode is brought to you by our supporters Bryn Ossington, Amanda Orr, and Anthony Watts. Theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. Thank you for supporting Canada Land.